It's Thursday, 8th of February, and you're listening to the Grincast. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Cello.
Ciao.
Hamilton.
Hello.
Nikolai.
Hello.
And Catty.
Hello.
Today we'll be covering the Spectrum Vega Plus from Retro Computers Limited has been in the news again. Sunless Skies has been delayed. There's another new Battle Royale game called Fear the Wolves announced. PUBG has released an early access infographic. And we'll be talking about Far Cry 5's Bonkers Season Pass. And if we've got time at the end, we'll be talking about the Overwatch League, which is started yesterday, I believe.
Well, it's been going for a while, but the finals are nearly here, so that's something.
Sorry, I was under the impression that like they did it in stages, and this was the latest stage.
It's the last set of matches before the final, and then after that is stage two. But more of that later.
Yes, you can correct me more later. Right, but first, what's everyone been playing for Game Grin? What work can we expect to see in the coming weeks? Cello.
I don't plan that far ahead, and so far I've been busy. I finally started clearing my backlog, so I decided to start playing Stardew Valley and Assassin's Creed Origins. It's kind of shameful that to realize I'm probably not going to be able to finish either, because they're just so big and require so much effort, and I just don't have the time.
But the key question is, which villager are you going to romance?
I'm going to what?
Which villager are you going to romance?
You got to pick a girl or a guy.
I didn't know you could do that yet.
You can marry them.
Yeah, I am like 10 days into the game, and I'm already like overwhelmed by so many
stuff.
And
you haven't chosen a wife yet?
I'm an old guy, I take my time.
I picked my girl on literally the first day, and I've only talked to her every single day I've played that game.
Cat is a stalker.
Any other NPCs come up to me, and I'm just like, fuck off, I'm not interested.
Wow. I didn't know that was a thing. Like, I tried to give people gifts, and they go like, what the fuck am I going to do with this? And they kind of go, I don't know.
You got to give people the right gifts.
Yeah, I imagine that. I'm feeling so stingy with everything. Like, you know, I'm trying to plant stuff and everything needs money. And then it started raining and I heard something that sounded like a werewolf in the distance. So I was like, oh shit, this is not good. And then being a Gryffindor, I obviously started looking for it and I couldn't find anything. So I have the impression that the game will naturally introduce me stuff as the days progress. So I'm just like a little over a week in the game, so you know, I just want stuff to happen, and it doesn't. I have to wait, so it's teaching me patience, and at the same time, pissing me off. It's
what
pretty...
you end up doing, if you're like me anyway, you'll end up looking at the wiki, and that'll slowly descend into min-maxing every single day. Like,
yeah,
oh, it's so-and-so's birthday today, I'll go into town, give them this gift they really like, then it's, oh, it's raining, so I can't, there's no point in watering the crops, so I'll go and do some mining for a bit, and maybe go farther into the dungeon. And then, like, also, oh, it's 12 o'clock, I suppose you should go and fish for that fish that only turns up at night in the lake near the dungeon.
Dungeon?
What? Dungeon?
Yeah, there's a dungeon in the caves at the, like, way north of the town.
Yeah,
it's basically where I spent half my time.
I got to, like, level 10, I think, on the caves? Or 7? Something like that. I unlocked the adventure thingy. So I went inside, and there's, like, everything costs so much money, and I don't know, it's just so many things being... Like, the game does a very good job of, like, introducing you to things slowly, but at the same time, it's so many things for you to do, and the timer is always kicking on, and you're, like, trying to balance everything. And, like, it's a game about farming, but there are so many things to do. That kind of... Yeah. It's a fun game. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure if it'll be... Unlike Assassin's Creed Origins, which I just playing don't want to. I started playing a couple of weeks ago, and I finally got like 4 or 5 hours into the game, and I'm just so tired of it. It's just so Ubisoft. It's so crappy.
Looks nice though.
It does. It is a beautiful game, but it, like from gameplay, the way you control the characters and the fights, everything is just so, you know, suboptimal that it's a bit. Eh.
The thing that turned me off, I don't know whether this is true, I may be vastly misinformed, but when you hit people, it shows damage numbers.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's it for me. Can't deal with that.
Me neither. I tried to find like an option to disable it, and I couldn't. Maybe there is. Probably there is, but I couldn't find it. And in that respect, it really pisses you off because, you know, you have the Hidden Blade, which is supposed to be like, you know, you stab the guy in the guts and he just bleeds to death and everything. But the game is kind of like Witcher. You have like levels and stuff. So if you go to an area that is too strong for you, whatever sense that makes, and you go to like a normal soldier in the street and you stab him, you don't kill him and you take like 5% of his health. So you're just stabbing him in the neck with a Hidden Blade and he goes, and attacks and kills you in one sword strike. It's like it's really immersion breaking. It's like really, it's not something I expect from a, you know, a historical title. So it's just
Yeah, in the previous Assassin's Creed, you could just go and stab and kill anyone. But
yeah, that's the fun of it. Like the Hidden Blade is a very powerful weapon. It requires like, you know, you can't go into a fight with it because if you do, you get your ass kicked. And the idea is that if you are stealthy enough to get someone with the Hidden Blade, that's it. They're gone. But in this,
it seems like a
go on. Sorry. No, go on.
I was saying, it seems like a very poor way to fix player complaints about the combat, which by the time we got to Syndicate was very much just spamming counter until you killed everyone. But adding health bars and damage numbers isn't the right way to fix it, in my opinion.
It isn't. They just tried to turn the game into Witcher, and like one of the most clear things is that you lost the aspect of like social stealth. The thing about, you know, walking in the middle of crowds and approaching a guy from behind without him seeing, just stabbing and getting off away without anyone noticing, that is like the classic Assassin's Creed thing that appeared in every single trailer ever. And they removed that. So in this game, every single stealth requires that you crouch into a bush. So you're just like using shrubbery to hide yourself every single time. So you go into the middle of Alexandria, which is like the hugest Roman city in Egypt, where you have the pharaohs, you have the library, you have like the pinnacle of civilization in Roman times in Egypt. And you go there, and in the middle of the plaza, there's like 10,000 people, and you can't hide among them. You have to use the shrubbery to get near a guard and stab him.
So that was one of the things I loved about the old Assassin's Creed games, where it was, because I'm really bad at stealth because I panic. And when you're panicking, it's very difficult to make a rational decision. But in Assassin's Creed, if you got caught out, it was like, where can I hide? Literally everywhere. Do you see people? You can hide there.
Yeah, it's so awesome. It's the kind of thing that happens in movies. Like the guy running along and, you know, they just lose him in a bunch of people. That is a very freeing thing. Like, as you said, it really helps escape stealth. And also to approach. Like, you feel very awesome just, you know, approaching like in the middle of 10,000 people, and the guy has no idea that you're there. Then you just go from behind, stabbing, and keep moving as nothing ever happened, and then like 5 seconds later he falls down. It's a pretty awesome thing.
And it adds so much to that power fantasy of, actually, I am a super talented assassin who can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah. But yeah, that's been me.
Right, Hamilton.
Hello.
What have you been up to?
As per usual, I've been watching and tracking the cringe, also known as the Overwatch League. We'll talk about that later, but I've also something that might end up with a few articles. I know on Gamer we already have our resident Monster Hunter expert, but I've been playing Monster Hunter World. I spent a long time looking at this series and umming and ahhing about it and thinking, oh, should I buy it, should I not? And I finally convinced myself, well, I didn't convince myself, the trailer convinced me, and the little cutscenes where your feline companions cook fish did it for me. I finally bought the game, and it is it's pretty darn good. And as someone who becomes a bit of a, not exactly a completionist, but I like to be leveled up by the time I get to the next section, and in this game that requires quite a lot of grind, but it's fun grind. It's not quite like MMO grinding, and I think the fact that you can fight a monster one time around and kick their ass, and then the next time it'll be obviously a completely different specimen of that monster, and then it will kick your ass, keeps it fresh. And playing with, there's 14 different weapon types that you can switch to without any attribute needs or stat needs at any one time, and which really keeps it fresh. Like, I've swapped weapons maybe four or five times before I settled on one I was comfortable with. And really, it's really well presented. Really, it's got a lot of character. There's a lot of fun in it. I'm about, I think I've played nearly 35 hours of it, and I'm still only maybe about a third of the way through the main storyline, which is quite short, really. And you know, people are already putting in, have got more than 100 hours into it and things like that. But yeah, it's really good. Perhaps there'll be some sort of like noob's guide to Monster Hunter or something like that in the near future. And that's pretty much it. Been it for me. And of course, as always, you know, it's a given. I've been playing Football Manager, but well, less said about that, the better.
I thought you were going to say you've been playing Persona.
No, I have just almost, and I can see you greedily, well, not greedily, in fact, justifiably wanting your copy of Persona back.
No, it's fine. Like I said in the Discord, I've gone and bought the definitive edition or whatever it is.
Oh, all the cool costumes.
Sale. Yeah.
Ooh, I shamefully, I'm thinking about buying the costumes, but yeah, I'm about 2 or 3 hours away from completing my third run through of it, the man whore run through where you date every single girl available. Just see what happens. Yep, that's me.
Good player.
Okay, Nikki, what have you been up to?
Not much overly, because I've been dealing with a wrist injury, but I've had some time, more than enough time to put into Monster Hunter World. But we're not even going to start down that rabbit hole with me. But I've got a few things I've been playing as well to get up on the site. So if I need to double check what it's called, actually. That always bodes well when you forget the name of the game you're playing. Star Fruit Racing, looking at the preview for that. It's Mario Kart with fruit and adorable girls. That's pretty much the sales pitch.
Right, Spherical, what have you been up to?
Have been falling in love with Overgrowth. I went from sort of jumping in and out and putting a few hours in to the last two times I've spoken, I said that the controls weren't really sort of sitting with me. I just wasn't quite getting it. Then I started playing it on Saturday, I think, and it just clicked. And holy crap, that game is so good. The combat is so satisfying when you finally get it right. And I want to do another playthrough of it on a harder difficulty to really appreciate it, because I think now I've kind of know exactly what I need to do to make everything work. I want a little bit more challenge, because the game became far too easy come the end of it. There was literally a boss fight that had sort of been bigging up for a few missions, and I killed it without it even getting an attempt at my life in.
So you get too good.
I got far too good for the easiest difficulty of this game. But yeah, past that, I've not really been playing much. I played a little bit more Megaton Rainfall. I've now basically finished that, and I have a lot of thoughts. Most of them good. A few of them are how I think they could have improved it. And that is also going to be an article on Game Grin, hopefully this week.
Awesome. Myself, I've played a bit of Metro 2033 Redux the first Metro Diary is going to be going up on Saturday. So I've written up the second part for next week. I've also I did a So I Tried for the game Hell Girls. It's a match 3 with boobies. And I've been playing a bit of Monster Hunter World and mentally comparing it to Dauntless, which I also dipped back into. There was a big reset and some big changes to that recently.
See, this makes me think we should stream a hunt on... I hope everyone's got it on PS4.
Xbox One.
Oh, you're kidding me. I just want to say this: you're doing a Diaries of Metro, and
you—that's right.
You hate jump scares and scary games.
That's also true.
Oh, this should definitely be, have a lot more tension in it than the Splinter Cell ones.
Yes, so far so jumpy.
There's a level later on that, apart from like Amnesia. It was the only other game that made me like stand up and walk away from my computer because I was so freaked out by it.
Have you met the librarian yet?
There we go, that's the one I was trying to talk about without spoiling it.
Yep, I was just the best thing is at the library.
Right, I've just started chapter 2. I've just left God, I've already forgotten the name of the station. Well, it just left Riga through the back passage. And that's literally where I stopped.
Okay. well, let us know how you get on when you get to a certain point in the game.
You'll know it when you see it.
And the screams heard for miles.
Well, I'll put it this way. When I played Vampire the Masquerade, Bloodlines the Masquerade, there's a bit in a ghost house, and I Alt F forward that.
To quickly just drop back to, you mentioned Dauntless. Are you as worried about that as I am? Because I was under the impression it would be releasing sort of vaguely soon, but reading from their blog posts they've been posting the last sort of month or so, they seem to be a long way off even open beta.
Yeah, they when they released the buy-in beta that's currently running, they did so around the same time that Monster Hunter World's release date was announced, and me and Puce played it at the time, and it definitely does seem, well, did at the time, and still kind of does seem to be like rushing out. We were here first. We were the first monster hunting game on PC. The actual honor for that goes to Evolve.
Is this sort of going a similar way to Battleborn, in that it released really close to Overwatch and then just sort of, well, we all know what happened.
Well, Dauntless was already planned to go free-to-play upon release. So it has that going for it.
I mean, Monster Hunter World isn't coming out on PC for quite some time, so if they can hurry up...
Well, it's September, I think, isn't it? So they've
I thought it was October.
Is it as late as October? I'll take your word for that. I thought it was September, but if it's... They've got until then... Or they're going to really struggle, even as a free-to-play game. From what people have been talking about Monster Hunter on console, it sounds like something that once you play, you don't play anything else.
Yeah, like, a load of games have come out this week that I've actually waited quite some time to play, and I'm still in Monster Hunter.
Gotta get those Anjanath teeth.
Raffian, that's where I'm at.
That's what I mean, I've been spending so long farming Anjanath, so I haven't had time to get to Rathians yet.
I'm so bad with names that I've been playing this game, and I don't know what you two are on about.
Yeah,
T-Rex or Dragon.
T-Rex thing, on PC, yeah. And I'm sure that means something.
See, I'm dyslexic. I have a hard time remembering and reading some of the names that the monsters, so I've kind of just nicknamed them. So, like, there's one that, like, blinds you. That's Flashbang Boy. Then you've also got this red, like, really clear one. He's Arsehole. by Monster Hunter. It's a good game.
The Monster Hunter Podcast by Greek Game Grid.
I'm sure I'll join in on this excitement when it comes out on PC. And no one else will want to talk about it because they've finished it months ago.
Before we move on and actually start the podcast, can I say one more thing about Monster Hunter?
Go ahead.
They need to fix the hitboxes. That's it.
You need to use a bigger sword.
No, what I mean is that, like, the hitboxes, they're good, but there's been too many times where you just get one-shotted. And because, like, the monster charged forward, but you were standing to the side of it, and you're just kind of there like, what? And it happens a little bit too often.
Got to get on your rolling game.
There you go, I'm just terrible.
Yeah, you got to get rolling.
Obviously it depends on your weapon, but we'll probably have to talk about this after the podcast.
Right, our first news story, the Spectrum Vega Plus, which was in, well, it was crowdfunded back in 2016 and was supposed to be shipped out in September 2016. They're still not shipped out because they've, well, they are still planning them. The company is still trading, and people, well, understandably have had enough of waiting over 2 years for this crowdfunded thing they wanted. Someone has actually taken Retro Computers Limited, the company behind it, to court and awarded the full sum of £584, which covers the £85 cost of the device, which he never got, postage, travel costs, and loss of earnings. I believe that's the loss, the earnings he lost because he was attending court. Yeah, the judge awarded it because the contract was made despite Retro Computers Limited arguing that the contract was made with Indiegogo. The judge ruled that because of the wording of the pledge, the contract was with Retro Computers Limited themselves, and so they, yeah, they were guilty. They owed the money.
Hey, good riddance. As fellow podcaster who isn't here today, Dominoid, said in our group chat, he wanted us to call RCL a bunch of thieving censored because there's children nearby.
My headphones, they can't hear.
yeah, that isn't actually where the story ends. I think 2-3 days ago, so just after the news came out that the guy had successfully sued RCL, Indiegogo has basically said that they need, Retro Computers Limited need to have shipped everything by the end of May, or they are going to start collecting on debts, because this is obviously looking bad on Indiegogo as much as it is Retro Computers.
So
it's good that they're actually coming in, even though it's maybe a year late.
But I don't understand how, again, I'm just not very knowledgeable on this side of things, but how does Indiegogo, where do they stand in all of this? Because obviously I know they're essentially the middleman, but isn't this all between the company and the consumers, or what sort of leverage have they got?
I think it is. I can't say for certain, but I believe the way it works is to use the Indiegogo service, you sign a contract, and it's basically if you don't deliver, you're breaking the contract with them. So that's, I think, their way into this.
Well, there's tons of crowdfunding projects that never amount to anything. That people just figuratively take the money and run. So, as you say, it all depends on the wording of whatever agreement they signed.
I think the only reason that Indiegogo are even getting involved in this is because it's blowing up a little bit. Like, we're getting this court case, and it is talked about quite regularly recently because people are getting very angry at it, even people who weren't involved in the crowdfunding campaign to start with. So it's kind of looking a little bad on them. So they're making sure that everyone knows what side of this they're on.
If only Kickstarter had done this with Ouya. No, you're saying that. No, sorry, you go.
I thought Ouya did launch fine, but it was just really shit.
Yeah. But this is the thing, I can't believe that even now, a couple of years after the starting thing, sort of, the crowdfunding phase sort of started, we're still having this problem with people just unable to deliver because they just can't seem to manage a bloody business, you know?
Yeah, and it doesn't help that Retro Computers Limited has just remained completely silent in the interim, the only thing that makes them speak up is actual legal threats.
It's a shame as well, because I mean, like, I've only ever backed one thing, and that was the Dark Souls board game, which arrived a little bit delayed, but the communication's been, you know, there's communication every week from those guys, and like all the stuff isn't even going to be finally shipped later this year, which is quite some time after the thing started, but because of the communication being there, like, it's not so bad.
So that was one of the things. I've just seen an update from literally today. Indiegogo, their trust and safety team has basically asked RCL to post a significant update. So it was something they weren't doing, which has now happened. If the campaign does not fulfill by the end of May, Indiegogo's trust and safety team will take additional steps to protect backers by sending the campaign to a third-party collections agency to work on recouping backer funds. So basically,
and breaking kneecaps.
And breaking kneecaps. But it basically sounds like they've decided to put a limit on how long these can go unfulfilled. So that's their hand in this.
Well, speaking of unfulfilled crowdfunding, Sunless Skies has been delayed, despite a remarkably high Kickstarter, in their words, because it hasn't met the level of sales that they wanted. They wanted, it's reached 15% as many copies as Sunless Sea in a comparable time period, which they attribute to they went into early access too early, and the game just wasn't ready for media attention, so they've lost sales because of that, and because they've lost sales due to so many people backing it on Kickstarter, it hasn't been as prominent on Steam. Which is bad for them, because they've had to make four people redundant, four people on the team. Which is never good for an indie dev to have to lay people off, but if they're not making enough money to keep them on and keep producing the game, then at least we know why they're doing it. As well as that, they have a website and an app for Fallen London, and due to the amount of time it takes to port the website stuff to the mobile app, they're going to be closing down the mobile app. And they're relaunching the website in a few months. And they're having to retire their Fund Better fund for small narrative games, which obviously they're not making enough money to support themselves, so they can't support other developers. Are any of you familiar with Sunless Sea and Sunless Skies?
I'm not familiar with those games, but I have played Fallen London a little bit. It's sort of this kind of interesting story. The closest thing I can think of is like a choose your own adventure mixed with a clicker game. So it's kind of, you go through and there is a story there, but you kind of have to do other things that aren't. So it's not so much, oh, you find a thing, what do you want to do? And there's a list of options. Some of them you can't do because you don't have the resources, for example. But there's ways of getting it. It's kind of a confusing idea, but it works really well. Though I understand why they're rebuilding the website, because it was a little clunky. I think it works, hopefully will work a little bit better as a more HTML5 run thing, rather than just here's a load of links on a page. I was just gonna say, I think it's a bit of a shame, because I've met the Fail Better guys a couple times at conventions and things, and they're nice. They're nice people. They seem to work pretty hard, and they're really passionate about the games they've made. It's just, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's not even like they've made bad games either, because Sunless Skies is currently mostly positive. Sunless Seas is very positive, I think. People like their games, it's just not enough people seem to be buying them.
Yeah, as you say, on Steam they have mostly positive Sunless Skies reviews, but there's only 42 of them, which is a tiny amount. They're right that it's not being getting the attention that they deserve. Sunless Sea has the Lovecraftian user-defined tag, which I find entertaining. But yes, it's a shame.
I do love that. I think the Lovecraftian sort of fits, because the top line of their description is "Lose your mind, eat your crew, die" in all caps. Sunless Skies does not have the same kind of good opening line. I think that's what they, that's what you need to do. You forget about early access. Just launch a game and replace your really bad description on Steam.
I think you've solved all their money issues.
Memes. Let your memes be dreams. Automatic overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam.
What does that mean?
Nothing but memes.
From one indie dev to another, the team behind Savarium, Vostok Games, which is made up of former Stalker team members, have announced that they're doing Battle Royale game, Fear the Wolves. And it's going to feature 100 people dumped on a map. In this case, it's going to be an irradiated Chernobyl, post-apocalyptic. You'll be fighting it out to be the last one standing, either in squads or alone. Where they hope to differentiate is that there's going to be deadly anomalies, dynamically changing weather, a day-night cycle, and mutated creatures.
I don't want to sound like I'm being cynical or anything, but I'm all for people doing more games, but shouldn't they maybe finish the game they're currently working on? Because I didn't know about this game, just had a look, and it's still in early access.
The Savarium. Yeah.
It also has recently very negative reviews, people saying that it's not very well optimized or made or works. A few of these people seem to be citing AI problems. Also, not to be cynical on someone trying to shake up a genre, but isn't having like PvE elements in a battle royale kind of game kind of detracting from it somewhat?
Sounds like that'll piss off a lot of players.
Yeah, I mean, I can just see so many times that you will be having an epic gunfight across hills between two groups, and then one group has the unfortunate enough to be standing near some weird mutated bear that just comes and kills them all instantly.
It's two sides of a coin, really, because I'm sure there are people that will absolutely love that aspect of the PvP, PvE, but as you say, other people might find it quite frustrating, I think, to say the least. But time will tell.
Yeah, understandable. So, the team behind it and the fact they have a still early access game isn't isn't revving anyone's engine.
I think we're already at a point where there are too many Battle Royale games, and there's so many more on the horizon.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just we've had the whiplash of, we've seen this so many times in the last sort of decade, where we've had so many people just piling on MMOs, and then so many people just piling on MOBAs, and now
survival games,
Minecraft.
Yeah, and then survival games, and now it's coming on to Battle Royale games, and they're getting faster and faster each time. I mean, PlayerUnknown's only came out this time last year, and we've already got more than I can count off the top of my head that have just come in and either launched or are saying they're going to.
The market demand is crazy, though. Like, I think PlayerUnknown's had about 3 million concurrent players, or 3.5 million concurrent players, and I just saw it recently that Fortnite as well has hit 3.5 million concurrent players. So they're getting something right.
I mean, it's good to, you know, competition breeds, you know, innovation, but I think the concern in this particular aspect, this particular game, is that it's coming from a studio where they still got one major title in early access. It's not seeming to be doing, currently being in an ideal state. So I think just from the get-go, on paper, it's got a cool idea, but I worry people may be turned off because of the track record of the current title, you know?
Yeah, it kind of happened with Ark. They released a DLC while they were in early access that didn't please the player base.
Although I have to say, like, what Fortnite did with the whole Battle Royale thing, they did a pretty good pivot. As much as it hurts me that they actually detracted from the co-op actual gameplay, which is, I always prefer co-op over competitive, they did a pretty good job. Like, when you play PUBG and Fortnite Battle Royale, they may be in the same genres, but they are completely different games. It's kind of like Saints Row 3 and GTA 5, for example. So I don't think it's such a bad thing, sorry.
Well, Fortnite hasn't really turned away from from what they originally made. They've just made this additional mode.
Yeah, but they focus way too much. Like, I play Fortnite co-op, and when Battle Royale came in, it was like, you know, half and half the patch notes, and they tried to cater to both and all that. And as Battle Royale gets more and more impressive, and they have more and more people playing, the patch notes and the content drops. So now every week you have, like, new weapons, new this, new that for Battle Royale, and you get a most patch fix for the co-op. So there's been, like, a couple of months already that they haven't had a single content drop for co-op. Only patch notes, only bug fixes, because... And then you have, like, snipers, revolvers, sniper mode, new map, new everything for the Battle Royale, which makes sense, like, from a business perspective. That's the thing that makes their money, so go for it. But it is a little bit sad.
Yeah, I see that.
It's especially sad because their original plan for Fortnite before the Battle Royale was it was going to be a buy-in early access while they developed the co-op mode. And now it seems like they're just selling that as, like, story mode, and the Battle Royale is going to be the free pillar of it.
Yeah, I kind of have the impression they're only keeping the co-op around because, one, it's paid, and two, people already paid for it and play it sometimes. Like, it's more of a life support thing, just Battle Royale is plowing ahead and just dragging co-op along with it. Like, might as well, because it's the same game, same engine, same everything. So they just drag it along and go, we are supporting this one that makes a shitload of money, might as well just support that one that people paid for it. That's why they don't advertise it anymore. Like, you don't have more, when you type Fortnite into Google, you have, like, 8 pages saying play it for free, and then you have, like, 2 that goes, oh, they also have a co-op mode. They even changed the name. It used to be, like, just Fortnite and Fortnite Battle Royale, and now it is Fortnite, no, there isn't a Fortnite, it's just, like, Face the Storm, which is the co-op story mode, and Fortnite Battle Royale. So they like pretty much separated the two stuff.
But the thing is that the single player mode is still going to be free to play in a few months' time. That was the thing. Fortnite always said that they would be a buy-in beta and they'd go free-to-play. Obviously, then the Battle Royale mode came along. But the co-op single-player side of things, that's still going to be go free. That's still going free, unless they've announced something different recently.
Well, that's just going to give you an excuse to not support it anymore, then. We'll have to see how many people actually play the co-op if it does go free. But I don't know, like Nikki said about competition breeds innovation and all that, the truth is that those games are kind of always the same thing. Like, the things that people like in Counter-Strike and PUBG and Fortnite and all that, it's always the same thing. It's like, it's a shooter that is very quick and easy to jump in and hard to master, and then you just run around shooting people and jumping and doing like crazy stuff with your fingers. And that's the same thing in all of them. And then you have something that is like a new co-op that requires people to coordinate and think and blah blah blah, and everybody loses interest. So I don't realistically see co-op for Fortnite taking off in any way, especially with Battle Royale soaring so high. But that is some pretty good news.
Yeah, Nick, they spoke a couple days ago and said that they're planning to launch for free in 2018, though there's no specific date. So I'll be interested to see actually what does happen when Save the World does come out for free. Because there's a lot of people I know who don't care about the Battle Royale stuff, but jump at the chance to playing co-op games. I know, because I am one of them.
I do like a bit of Wildlands.
And Fortnite is fun. Like, the Battle Royale stuff is actually quite fun. But I can't be dealing with playing it for more than, like, a couple rounds.
But this is the thing, is the Battle Royale's kind of unique feature is obviously the building. And although Epic Games haven't released any numbers, I'd really like to see the numbers, because I do wonder how many people have played a few rounds of the Battle Royale and gone, actually, do you know what? This mechanic's quite nice. Yeah, let's maybe play the co-op with some friends. But of course, being buy-in at the minute, that's that wall there. So until they give us some numbers, which I really want to see, it's really hard to tell. But good on them for having, like, I think it was like 40 million players or something the other day.
I think there's also the case of it being, like, there is some... This again.
They had 3.4 million users on Sunday, but it crashed.
But yeah, so I don't think a lot of people actually played the free-to-play and thought, like, this would be fun against the AI. Because I think people who play Battle Royale games don't want to fight AI, they want to fight other people. Otherwise, you can just play, like, any horde mode or something like that. This is pure speculation. It's just like, in my mind, the Venn diagram doesn't interlap that specific case. People who play competitive games are not people who look at a game and go, this would be great with friends against AI.
Well, moving from one Battle Royale to the big Battle Royale, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds released an infographic about their early access stats. They sold over 26 million copies on Steam and other platforms since from entering, well, from alpha really to entering exiting early access. 13,500 people were killed by frying pans. That means a player died every 2 seconds from a frying pan. Their peak concurrent players were 3,148K.
It's a really weird way of formatting it.
Yeah.
I think it's 3.1 million, I think.
Yeah.
and they had literally thousands of streams.
Well, just over a million. That's 1,000K. Again, a really stupid way of putting that.
Korean, don't blame them.
I blame them.
At least they're not Indian and they start bringing in craw to it.
Let's leave the racism to Cal.
when you have words that correspond to thousands of numbers, I work with an Indian company, and when they come up and they say, oh, we've sold 2 lakh worth of reports this month, or we've had 2 lakh and 4 crore profit, you're like, what?
Alex, your financial journalism is showing.
Yeah, there's some interesting stats there. I'll pop a link to the tweet they posted in the show notes. It shows that the most popular weapons are the M416, the M16A4.
That's a sniper.
It was a very similar.
No, not really. The M4A1 is a assault rifle. The M16 is a. Actually, no, sorry, both of them are assault rifle families, but those specific ones are specifically a mid-range assault rifle and a sniper rifle in real life.
But the numbers
are
very
similar. Yes, they are.
The only difference is there's an A in one of them. And the AKM. And the popular vehicles were the UAZ, UAZ, Dacia. And the buggy. I can pronounce buggy.
There's two actually very interesting stats I thought on here. First is the total playtime is 2.7 billion hours. So that's 310,000 years. And Homo sapiens appeared on Earth roughly 315,000 years ago. So that's a thing, apparently. And also, people drove the UAZ 12,430 times the distance to the moon. So that's 6,000 trips to the moon and back.
To put it into context, every single planet in the solar system, if put between Earth and the moon, would fit. Like, in a row.
See, they missed out two statistics that I'd love to have known. The first one being, like, how many 12-year-olds are playing the game, and the second one being, like, how many, like, streamers have become so angry because of this game.
Well, I can answer
quite hard to quantify.
The number of 12-year-olds is there's 26 million copies sold, so it's about 25.9 million.
But no, these are some impressive numbers, and, like, again, when you see them, it's just like, wow, okay. If you weren't taking the Battle Royale genre seriously, which if you weren't, what's wrong with you? You'd better be taking it seriously now.
Yeah, it's not my kind of game, but even I can see the draw of it.
I see the appeal, but I don't want to play because I'll get stuck in it and I'll end up hating myself.
To actually say if it's that impressive, we should look at games like, I don't know, like, alright, the time frame is completely different, but if you look at stuff like GTA or Civilization or stuff like that, I'm pretty sure people spend way more time and drove way more than they did in Battle Royale games. And I'm not arguing the Battle Royale games are a huge hit, they are. I'm just saying that that's a marketing ploy. You know,
but what you're saying to me, though, just sounds like... I mean, I get what you're saying, but it almost sounds like you're saying we should compare this to football. It's, comparing the different genres is a bit, kind of, to me, seems a bit like a waste thing to do, but like it does make sense.
It's just like for example, they played for so many hours that the Homo sapiens could have come. It's not really a quantifiable thing. Like, time doesn't work that way.
To quantify it in a slightly different way, then, in 2012, Kotaku ran an article saying that nearly 6 million years of World of Warcraft had been played. World of Warcraft came out in 2004, so in 8 years, 6 million years mm-hmm. was played. In 1 year, they've done a third of a million years. So it's
a huge amount. If they maintained this exact rate of growth, they probably wouldn't surpass World of Warcraft. if you put it in another. That's a very good comparison. That's the kind of thing I mean. Like, you look at it and you go, marketing plug, wow, this is amazing. But then when you compare with another game that had a similar thing, you kind of go, not so much.
Assuming that 6 million years was split evenly across all 8 years, that's really weird to say. Which obviously it wouldn't have been because more people joined the expansion. But
there were no thing as viral things.
It splits down to 750,000 years a year were played. So it's about half, but it's not too bad considering.
If you look at it across the genre as well, I mean, I don't know, it's probably higher now for Battlegrounds, but that's 3.1 million concurrent players. Fortnite just said it had 3.5 million concurrent players. So that's a fair wedge of people playing one type of game.
Also, that 6 million years was over 11 million players. So if...
Stop with your confusing maths.
I'm sorry, there's so many numbers in this story.
I'm going to need a math degree to follow this conversation. So let's go on to something a lot simpler. The Far Cry 5 Season Pass contents have been announced. As I commented on the site, typically I don't like Season Passes that, one, have content that should be in the main game, two, don't tell you what it will entail, and three, are full of multiplayer content. Which means that I absolutely adore this Season Pass because it tells you what's in it, and it's completely bonkers and would not have fit in the main game if they'd put it in. There'll be three different add-ons taking to three very different locations. First one will be set in Vietnam, where you fight against the Viet Cong. The second will have players face off against hordes of zombies in multiple B-movie style events. And lastly, players will head off world and go toe to claws with Martian arachnids on Mars.
Is it just me, or does this sound like something that we would have expected from a game 10 years ago when games were still making expansions rather than DLC?
Ubisoft is stuck 10 years ago.
Actually, even longer.
Ubisoft approached the DLC over the past 10 years, ever since Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon has been, let's just make the craziest shit we can.
What was Far Cry 4's DLC? Because I remember...
It was Far Cry 4.
Yeah, it was like... No, they had something about like a Yeti hunt, something of the Yeti. Yeah. You're like stuck in a valley with the, which wasn't a bad DLC to be fair, but it wasn't actually good either. I don't know, because usually when people play an expansion, they kind of go, "Oh, I want more of this game that I love, but with better stuff." And Ubisoft just goes, "Hey, you know what? What if we make a game completely different from that?" So you get like on our infamous case of Wildlands, you have a 4-player co-op game about a Tetico team taking down an narco nation in South America, and the expansion is like, let's put one person alone doing crazy jumps for likes on Facebook. That's literally Narco Road in one sentence. So it just begs the question, like, what the hell is Ubisoft thinking with expansions?
But the thing is, like, after Far Cry Blood Dragon, like, hearing them say they're going to take us to, you know, Vietnam, Mars, and some B-movie films, I'm just like, do it.
I think it works better than what they did do on Far Cry 4. So they released 3 DLC for that as well. You had Escape from Dergish Prison, which from the screenshots looks like Far Cry 4. You had Overrun, which looks like Far Cry 4, and you had Valley of the Yetis, the only one that had positive reviews on Steam. Looks a little bit different. So I think they've learned from, oh, the one that was a little bit different did well, and Far Cry Blood Dragon is one of their most lauded... Like, I know people who've played that and not like 3, but loved Blood Dragon.
Not really. The Escape one was pretty much a time trial. I play all of them. The prison one was a time trial. It was like the exact same mission that you have in the campaign, set like between it to explain a little gap that you have, and it's basically a time trial. Like, get down from the mountain as fast as you can. So everybody was like, eh. Yeti is actually a pretty good expansion in terms of copying the game. It is literally the same thing as the game. You have a outpost to clear, you have a new map to explore, you have a bunch of weapons, you can do whatever the fuck you want. The only things they change is you now have a base you can upgrade to resist attacks that come like every night or something like that. And you have the addition of mythical monsters in the form of yetis, and you have to look for them. So that's what I mean. Like, I think people like that because it is exactly Far Cry 4, but with new stuff. The one thing that is out there is the fact that Far Cry never really showed, you know, that kind of crazy stuff. Like, Far Cry 2 was completely realistic, Far Cry 3 went bonkers, and Far Cry 4 was somewhat okay until we went into Shangri-La, and then everything just... So yeah, that's the one thing that kind of goes out there, but that expansion is pretty much Far Cry 4 with more stuff.
See, I love the Shangri-La parts of Far Cry 4, and I wish there'd been more of that, because I found Far Cry 4 extremely sort of mundane. And I love the Far Cry series as well.
Far Cry 4 is very boring.
See, that was kind of what I sort of meant, though, that, like, Escape from Dergesh looks like it's just something that's stuck onto the map, and Overrun apparently is just a multiplayer thing. But Valley of the Yetis was like a whole new map, a whole new part of the game. And I think that's why they're going along with three completely new, like, just bits of the game that don't fit. Like, because what we know of Far Cry 5 so far, there are zombies, Viet Cong, and Martian spiders do not fit with weird racist Christians.
I suppose it's a way of Ubisoft being able to say to all of the gun-toting Americans who don't like the fact you're fighting white Christian Americans, hey, if you don't want to fight white Christian Americans, then get the season pass, you can fight the Viet Cong.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I still have the, you know, the thing, you are attracted to a game, like, for a bunch of reasons. So I guess nobody in the world is actually excited about traveling to Montana and shooting Americans. Unless you're like...
I am.
I'm super hyped for that. What do you want about?
Unless you're Andrew or ISIS. You're not really interested in shooting Americans. But then...
Hello, Alaka.
Wait, hold on a second there. You basically just said that me and Nikki are ISIS. How dare you reveal our
yeah.
secret?
Also, sorry, but like, what? I'm pretty sure everyone wants to shoot some Americans.
Breaking news. But yeah, no, like, what I mean is, like, for example, some of the best DLCs expansions we've ever had, like, you know, XCON and Civilization and all that, they always take something that the game is, and they expand it, they make it better. But when you take, like, for example, in Far Cry 3, the whole trip thing was, you know, had a sense. You had drugs injected and you went like crazy, blah, blah, blah. Far Cry 4 is the same thing. You're like doing a mystical journey and you use like the narcotics that the monks use and all that. But how do you go from I'm shooting Americans in Montana to I'm killing people in Mars and I'm traveling back to Vietnam through time and I'm entering inside a Hollywood movie? It kind of feels...
See,
the same... The same way that you can go into Assassin's Creed 3 and then
exactly,
be in an alternate timeline.
I was actually
King
building
Washington
up to that exact point. It makes no fucking sense.
But you see, there's a brilliant thing called non-canon.
Non-what?
Non-canon.
No.
If something is non-canon,
it's not a question,
then you just
about that, but that's the point. It's not a question of being canon. Like, that's what you have mods for. Like, a game, you know, you have a certain... You have a certain artistic direction, you have a lore, you have an idea. When you treat your DLCs as a mental dump of every shit you want to do and you can't fit into the game, it doesn't feel one holistic product. It just feels like weird shit thrown together. You build a whole... Like looking from a different gameplay perspective, the skills required for you to survive against the American cult in Montana... It's completely different from what you need to survive against spiders in Mars. That's not to mention fighting Viet Cong in the middle of a guerrilla warfare,
thing, though, is that...
or going inside zombies in a B-movie.
And I get what you're saying, but like, the thing is, though, is the people that feel that that's too much of a difference, they're not going to buy it, and that's fine. But for people like myself who think the DLC is going to be a right hilarious romp, sweet, you know?
Yeah,
it's just down to taste.
Right,
really.
That's your view, but what about the people who like Far Cry 4, 5 and want more of that and won't get it because Ubisoft blew the bucket?
Exactly.
That's what's been happening non-stop ever since Blood Dragon happened.
Cello, sorry, Cello, you cut Katie off.
I was just going to say, I actually kind of completely disagree. I'd rather have a game be completely self-contained and then have DLC that's maybe kind of more of the same thing, but does something vastly different, than a game that has... Here's the story, but then we've also got these DLC bits that come out months afterwards, cost additional money, and they answer questions from the story. Like, too many games have done that in the past where, oh, this thing from the main story we kind of just left hanging is answered in DLC. Because I don't always buy DLC.
Well, that's pretty much Final Fantasy in a nutshell.
That's why I stopped playing Assassin's Creed games after Assassin's Creed 2 said, oh, yeah, we can't access memory 12 and 13. Maybe later, once you've bought the DLC, we'll be able to access it.
Well, the PC version didn't have that. The PC version came with everything.
Didn't play on PC.
There's your lesson.
Play on the PC.
Right, and to... I know we're running a bit longer than we have been... so far this year, in a change. I wanted to talk about the Overwatch League, because we're going to be covering a bit more on Game Grin, and Hamilton wrote a pretty good sum up, an idiot's guide to the Overwatch League.
The idiot is me.
Again, I'll put a link in the show notes. Hamilton, would you like to run us through?
Sure, I'll fire through this. So, if you've been living under a rock, or you're trying to be contrarian and pretending you're not, haven't heard of one of the most popular games on the planet right now, Blizzard has launched its esports competition, the Overwatch League. Prior to this, there were a few third-party leagues with teams playing it competitively, but this is proper Blizzard-sponsored esports with a prize pool of $3.5 million. They bought their own arena in Los Angeles, and each player is given a guaranteed contract of $50,000 over the first year anyway, although they can negotiate for more if they want to. There's a player called Sinatra who plays for the San Francisco Shock, who managed to haggle a $150,000 contract, so well done to him. Obviously, a bit more sense in his brain than the rest. So, essentially there's that, and then the players get the guaranteed contract, they get guaranteed healthcare, dental insurance, all that stuff you need if you live in America, and they also get 50% of the winnings divided amongst all the players on the team. At the end, if they win. At the minute, they're all based in Los Angeles, but Blizzard is planning to create a sort of home and away structure where there will be different arenas all over the world where teams can play. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, there are 12 teams split between an Atlantic and a Pacific division, depending on roughly where their geography is. There's, to go through them again quickly, the Dallas Fuel, Seoul Dynasty, San Francisco Shock, Los Angeles Valiant, Los Angeles Gladiators, the Shanghai Dragons, and then in the Atlantic Division, London Spitfire, Florida Mayhem, Philadelphia Fusion, Houston Outlaws, Boston Uprising, and the New York Excelsior. Now, it's been running for, I believe, 5 weeks now, the first season, or the first stage, in fact. It's split between four stages, which each have their own little grand finals in them. And then at the end of the four stages, which last 5 weeks each, there are the playoffs between the teams at the top standing in each division, then the grand final between the winners of those games, and then an all-star weekend in which they have like the all-stars of the Atlantic versus all-stars of the Pacific. So we're into the final week now. In fact, playing live as we record this are the Philadelphia Fusion and the Boston Uprising on Twitch. We've got two more sets of games tomorrow. That's Friday, the February the 9th. And then on Saturday the 10th is the final round before we do the title matches on Sunday for a prize pool of $125,000. Essentially, what people thought was going to happen was essentially the team with the most Koreans was going to win. And that sort of proved to be the case for the first few weeks until Seoul Dynasty, who were the favourites because they were comprised entirely of Koreans, lost three games in a row to the Los Angeles Valiant, Florida Mayhem, I believe, and the Houston Outlaws. And the London Spitfire, sorry, not the Houston Outlaws. And London Spitfire took the lead. That is another team comprised entirely of Koreans, with New York Excelsior close behind them. That is another team comprised mainly of Koreans. The league has recently released... There's some big news in the league, actually, coming up this week that a player called Guguri, who is a female Overwatch player who'd been left out prior to the season, has now been drafted into the Shanghai Dragons, along with some other South Korean players. Shanghai Dragons are dead last in the standing. They've lost all nine of their games so far. But Guguri is one of the most well-known Overwatch players. She's a tank player who is considered the best in the world, so that's all good. And there's currently a discussion actually going on amongst players and fans alike as to whether Blizzard should try and make the teams in Overwatch more diverse, which is obviously some people are worrying that like that might dilute the talent pool, because technically it's supposed to be a showcase of the best in the world at Overwatch. That's pretty much a quick-fire summary of everything. There's so much more to it. There's, if you go on YouTube and search like Overwatch League cringe, essentially, you know, you're getting teams of 6 to 12 teenagers, paying them $50,000 a year, not really giving them a set of rules, and letting them loose every week. So there's quite a few cringe compilations of players doing strange things or dabbing to their heart's content, and generally just being weird teenagers. There's been some controversy as well with some of the players, especially Dallas Fuel, who are basically the meme team, because they're comprised of a number of famous streamers. One of which, XQC, has garnered more controversy than others because he's made homophobic comments and reported players for throwing games when they haven't even started playing yet. So yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. That was knackering.
Good job. Also worth noting as well, currently, as the games are going on at the minute, we've got a relatively recently new addition to Game Grim, covering the matches and doing highlights. So every day this weekend, I forget where we are in the week, you can sort of see what's going on with those and get a nice little recap. Just thought I'd plug that.
Yep. As I said, I'll link the Idiot's Guide, which has all the information that Hamilton's just shared and much, much more in the show notes.
I kind of hope that Guguri has a better time in Overwatch than Ramilla did in League of Legends. She was the first female League of Legends pro to play on a Western LCS stage, and Reddit and Twitch chat tore her to bits, and that team got fucked over pretty badly. And she was like forced to leave, basically. So I have a little bit left. Completely.
And with that, we've reached the end of our show. Thank you for joining me, Cello, Hamilton, Nikki, and Ketty. You can find us and tweet to us on Twitter at Grincast, and follow Game Grin on Facebook or Twitter. You can also go to gamegrin.com or just Google Game Grin and find us all over the place. Make sure to tune into Twitch, Mixer, or YouTube from 8 PM GMT for our daily streams. And while you're at it, game on.